Hello, everybody, and welcome to the IsCast Number 28. I'm David, and we have Melissa and Ben here, and well as Sean over on audio.
And a live studio audience.
And a live studio audience today. You won't hear him at all. So we got a lot of really interesting topics. I'm actually really excited for this podcast. We have some stuff to touch on Dawn Under Heaven, as we have now officially finished all photography for the movie, which is really exciting. And then we have some stuff to talk about NAB and a few other topics about YouTube. And then our big movie for this month was Avengers Age of Ultron. Which we'll talk about that later, and for those of us who liked it or didn't like it. So first off, we finally finished Dawn.
Yeah, super exciting. We had 3 days of pickups.
Yeah, three filming days and one voiceover day.
That's why, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was a good sign. So got some. Do you want to read the stats?
Yeah, so we have some stats on our production. We had 15 total days of production.
That is a lot for any movie.
Yes.
Nowadays.
We did a lot of Saturday, Sundays from early in the morning till about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So definitely full days.
Yep.
We had 6 hours and 22 minutes of 4K raw film that we shot. That was
crap. It's
so much
video.
Film.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Which we are editing into a 45-minute movie.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
David, did you decide with Wade whether you're going to produce in 280 or...
280?
Sorry, not 280. 1080 or 2K or whatever.
4K?
We filmed in 4K, but there's a discussion whether we're going to actually produce in 4K.
Yes, we did decide that we weren't going to... So our final product will not be out in 4K. The reality for us right now is getting visual effects assets that are that high of a resolution. Like the models where we make them ourselves, that's not a problem. But it's if we have other CG elements, for example, like explosions and stuff like that, there isn't that much 4K content of that out there right now. And so it'd just be hard to get. So I think the thought at this point is that we will probably be mastering it in 2K. So that, a little bit better than 1080. But.
And did you decide on an aspect ratio too?
Yes, I think we talked about this last time. We are going to be going with 2.39, I think is what the current one is. So it's if you go to Avengers Age of Ultron, that's in 2.39. So it's the it's the slightly letterbox, very wide cinematic looking look.
We are not filming in vertical. Just to...
No, we're not filming vertical. If you don't get that reference, please go to youtube.com/intersectionstudios and look up the video vertical. Thank you.
Yeah. Plugging our own stuff. Just to finish out the stats, we had 6.24 terabytes of video, which we're housing in a massive storage thing that's backed up in about 6 different places.
Yeah.
And then also backed up on Google Drive.
Yeah, which took how long to upload, Ben?
It hasn't finished yet.
Yeah. And then we had over 19 gigabytes of audio alone. That's the 19 is from the regular production days, and that's not including our pickup days worth of audio.
Yeah, I got even more audio from that. So it's a lot of data, and that's sort of, and I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, but we had this mindset of we wanted to respect the frame and only roll when we're ready to roll, because we are going to be dealing with such large files, and it's even as data storage is getting cheaper, I feel like there's still that. Still almost this mindset that, it's digital, I can just keep rolling forever and it doesn't matter. But with 4K, I think it's going to go back around almost like film. He's like, with film, when you're rolling that's like putting dollar bills through the gate. Film is expensive, and, we had to buy more. We had to buy a whole new RAID system to store the primary and the backup, and then we had to get like 4 other hard drives.
It's not even the final form that we want it to be in.
Yeah, exactly. So we had to invest quite a lot in storage for this stuff.
How much of the audio are we actually going to be using? The audio that we captured, how much of that are we actually
probably the vast majority of it.
Yeah.
It's in my experience now with going through the edits, it's all sounding really, really great. There's going to
be sans that windy day.
Yeah, sans that windy day.
Everything will be...
Yeah. With that, there may be 1 or 2 things we need to ADR, but I think the most of it will probably be location audio. ADRing is difficult and challenging all in its own right.
Mm-hmm. And so we're looking to distribute primarily on YouTube, right?
Yes, and hold that thought for a moment. Okay. I see you're trying to do the really nice segue.
Yes.
And David ruined it by calling it out.
I'm ruining it because there's another thing about sort of just touching on where are we going from here? What are some of the next things that you'll be hearing about in the next few months?
That would be a nice segue that we could have just done instead of reading it out loud.
Way to go, David.
Well, but we're not talking about YouTube. We're talking about post.
Oh, well, Ben was talking about like moving forward.
I'm ruining everything right now.
So moving forward, we're fully 100% in post mode now since there are no more pickup days.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. We will be marketing the hell out of it and
sending
making it look really cool.
Whatever,
that was a reference that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, it was. I'm terrible. I'm absolutely awful.
I guess working on finding 3D artists or improving our own skills as far as post work goes and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm. yep.
I think we're still hopeful that we finish it out by the end of this year, but that's still up in the air, I'm sure.
We have some, we're about to start getting into some of our post-production meetings and figuring out timetables and whatnot. And you can also look over the course of the next months, there will probably be various behind-the-scenes videos that will mm-hmm. be coming out. I won't say what specifically yet, as that is also still up in the air about what topics they'll be covering and everything. Yeah. But you can also look to that on our YouTube and on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting. And on our YouTube page, you will...
So bad, David. Okay, so we're looking to distribute on YouTube and then probably also have like a premiere here in Minnesota somewhere, like to actually rent out a theater. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of our audience will probably be watching on YouTube, to which we can't monetize because it's not our IP.
Intellectual property, correct. By the way, for people who don't know that.
It took me a long time for me to figure out what that was.
Yeah, so yeah. Not internet protocol, it's intellectual... Well, it can't be that, but in our context, it's intellectual property.
Sure, but as far as making money off of YouTube, that's definitely become a career for many different people. Mm-hmm. And now that YouTube is starting to, I guess, I don't know if they've disclosed all of their information about it yet, but talking about having this paid
subscription tier
thing, to where you pay $5 to YouTube or to Google or whoever, and you don't do ads. So I wonder how that's going to affect partners or the level of partner, whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying to find here what the... I don't know if there's any release on how much they think it will be.
Well, I think they said it was going to be somewhere like around $5 a month.
And so if you guys would...
anything over that would be
Would you guys pay $5 a month to not have ads?
I just run ad blocker plus for free.
Because they're going to piss off Google anyway.
Yeah, so... And I mean, I do feel bad because I want to support artists on YouTube, and I know that they make money on ads. But when you have an ad that's not skippable, that's 4 minutes long, that is so unacceptable.
Or even worse, when an ad doesn't load and you're still stuck on that ad screen, you can't skip it at all. That's
or even worse than that, and I've had this happen before, when the pre-roll ad is longer than the video I'm going to watch, like some of the really short, like 5-second films, or like the Cyanide and Happiness shorts that are only like 30 seconds long and I have a minute long ad before it. Absolutely infuriating.
The 3-minute long non-skippable ad I was talking about was before a 30-second cute video of a puppy. I was so upset.
I don't remember if it was one of you guys that posted I saw this on Reddit or something. It was a photo of a guy who had loaded up the commercial for it was like one of the new ads for Halo 5 Guardians, and the pre-roll ad was the ad he wanted to watch.
That's
cool.
On YouTube.
No.
that's
odd. It's like, well, it kind of works out, but it's also kind of annoying.
Well, that's odd because most of the larger corporations that have YouTube channels that show their ads won't put ads in front of them. So that's very odd that you ran into that.
Yeah, it's just like a screen capture of it.
Oh,
so
funny.
You know, to be fair, it's Reddit, it's the internet. It might have been Photoshop, but still.
Well, so
I can see that happening.
There are other ways that YouTube channels can make money, because I know that Quarter Digital, for instance, they set up a Patreon or
Patreon
or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
Where you can pay the artists directly.
Yeah,
I guess I haven't really looked too much into
that.
So how Patreon works is it's a It's a subscription model where you're basically paying artists to do whatever they do. You don't really get any product out of it other than that you're supporting the artists themselves. And they'll be like, you know, this money will be used toward X project or Y project.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think though you can reward them. I don't remember if it was Corridor Digital or someone else. Where like they did it where like if you gave over a certain amount, you got like source files from them.
Mm-hmm.
As a gift like from the project.
That's pretty common, or like hand drawings or, yeah. You know, some
and there was there's also another website, and of course I'm completely blanking on the name, and I think it was one that was pioneered by, I want to say it was like the Vlog Brothers, John and Hank Green, I think. And or maybe they're just on it. I don't know. Where it was one where if you pay to it, you get to see their videos early.
Oh.
So if they release a video on Mondays, you get to see it on Saturday.
Isn't Rooster Teeth do something like that?
Well, yeah. And well, they do that through their own site. Yes. Yeah. So like they do it on the, but this is like, like a separate paid service kind of thing, like Patreon. That's like you just get that content a little earlier there. Okay. So it is interesting to see where this will go, and if, because there's been all the other sites have been like sort of fighting to steal, quote unquote, as the media says, steal YouTube stars away from YouTube for their own site. So
yes and no. I think that a lot of people are still using YouTube as their platform. Because you know, like SourceFed and all of Filter Franco, like they're owned by the Discovery Channel, but yeah. All of their
Discovery
content,
Network.
Sorry, correct.
Yeah.
By Discovery Network, but they're still all on YouTube.
I think the biggest competition for YouTube right now is sort of in the business sector with things like Vimeo, where there are no ads, and so a lot of businesses are opting to host on Vimeo instead of YouTube. But I think YouTube is probably still a very primary source.
Yeah, YouTube and Vimeo have different cultures, I feel like, because YouTube is very much like, hey, we'll just have like your viral video or whatever.
Yeah, eating cinnamon or bathing in something weird. Yeah,
something dumb. But Vimeo has much more of a professional feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very more like you're being intentional with your art and whatnot. So, but I don't think that this paid subscription stuff at all will affect the people who make money off of YouTube too much.
Yeah, they would get so much backlash if it did.
Well, yeah. I think so, but then they make all their money based on figures of views, likes, and subscriptions to their own channel. So I don't imagine that this change in ads would affect that too much.
But there might be some people who, you know, there's obviously not everybody, but there might be people who rely on the ads more than they rely on the views and the people.
Mm-hmm.
Is a complete possibility
for smaller,
you know,
channels.
Yeah. You know, where like maybe they don't get as many views, but they happen to have an audience that clicks on the ads or whatever. That might be more worth it.
It'd be interesting to see who actually clicks on those ads. What kind of person actually clicks on the ads?
The people who accidentally click on those ads.
Exactly what I was going to say. When I accidentally click on it is when it happens, and it's infuriating when it opens a new tab and takes me away from my content.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, I suppose that the further as we go on in the years with YouTube, we're going to get like better YouTubers and everything like that, because they're going to have better equipment that they have access to that's cheaper and everything like that. That's a lot of what you saw at NAB, right, David?
Damn it, Ben. I had a segue for it and you ruined it, Ben. You ruined it.
I was there before you.
Well, based on your performance
and
your previous
segue. No, I had it
ready.
This was going to be awesome. I'm working on it. I'm trying to work on it. I love podcasting and want to get better at it, and you guys are taking away my opportunities.
I didn't do anything.
I'm blaming all of you. So, but yes, at NAB. Speaking of NAB, interesting story.
Oh, no.
So I was at NAB at the beginning of April, and A lot of new stuff. I noticed, and I know we talked about it last year, and I feel like a lot of it was like a lot of companies are like building for next year. Like there weren't even a whole lot of brand new product announcements or anything this year. Like it was all stuff like it's sort of like mini updates as if they're continuing to ramp to next year.
Kind of like the iPhone S6 or the 6S.
Less than that even. Less than that even.
Is that typical of any? I don't know much about any. Is it typical where there's like off years while they're making new things?
Sometimes though, I felt it compared to last year. I felt it particularly stronger this year. Whereas like they're like they, it was in sort of this weird lull. And, like, you know, there was plenty of new stuff. Like, Red unveiled the weapon upgrade for their camera, which is pretty nice. Canon unveiled a new C300 Mark II, which will shoot 4K, which looks really nice. The two biggest things I'm seeing more and more at NAB is a lot of what I'd call stuff in the area of autonomous gear. For example, like, as you guys know, when we're filming Dawn, the camera operator had their focus pull, their follow focus that to change the focus on the lens. Mm-hmm. One of the cool things I saw was a company called Red Rock Micro, and they have a new system called the Halo system, where it's like a...
Is it a ring?
No, but I sent you guys a photo trying to make it sound like it was a demo for the Halo game, but nobody commented on it. But
I didn't
look so it's this like it's I'm pretty sure it works with, is it ultrasound? I think I don't remember what the mechanism is, but you mount it on the camera and it shoots out. I'm pretty sure it is ultrasonic waves, and then it can tell where people are, and it will dynamic and it automatically changes the focus on your camera. So to those, like, people entering the
it's
room.
It's like a bat.
Isn't it supposed to be like the alien? Like
It's almost like that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I saw lots of stuff of this degree of like wireless follow focuses and things that are setting up to try and make people's jobs easier in some respect. But in the same way as with all disruptive technologies, take something away from the people who have spent their lives becoming good at it. Yeah. Being a good focus puller is a big deal. If you know how to pull focus really nicely, it's a skill that it takes a while to learn. But at the same time, it makes, for the lower end filmmaker, like if you have one less person you need around the camera because you don't have the budget to pay for another person, it might be really nice.
Yeah. I mean, that debate about, jobs versus technology is ever present and
ongoing.
Yeah.
Ever since the Industrial Revolution.
Progress march on.
Yes, but let's keep in mind, when the Industrial Revolution, you had people throwing their wooden shoes in the machines as protest because it got angry at the machines.
Why would you wear
hence
wooden
the
shoes?
Hence the word sabotage, because their shoes were called
sabots. Was
that
in the Netherlands?
Yes. Yep, yeah, their shoes were called sabots and sabotage for disrupting
people wear
things.
Wooden shoes there.
And also sabot, as in sabot rounds for tanks and guns and things. But anyway, I digress. The other big thing that was all over is drones. Drones is the name of the game this year. Everybody and their sister had a drone of one kind or another.
I really want a mega drone. I want to, like, there's this whole drone racing thing that's going on right now, and I really, really want to get into it because it's just like pod racing.
Did you just say make a drone or mega drone?
Sorry, I noticed how I said that wrong. It was make a drone. Okay.
I was going to say, did you want to like Power Rangers a bunch of different drones together and make a mega drone? Okay.
That would be so cool. You just have a whole bunch of drones up in the air and they start changing form and collapse together to make it.
Sort of where I thought you were going with that.
We can do that too. Let's do it. Yes.
I don't know. Maybe.
There was a lot of, and everyone's trying to get better at having autonomous features on the drones as well, making it easier for people to use. Because even the arguably right now, some of the simplest drones to use are the DJI Phantom drones. Mm-hmm. But even those, like, to operate them really well takes a lot of time. And there was one from a company called 3D Robotics, and they had a drone that you fly to where you want the move to start at, and you hit A, and then it moves to another point, and you hit B, and then it will just remember where those two points are and where it's pointing, and it will just go back and forth between them as many times as you want. So if you have a take, if you need to keep doing the same take over and over again,
like
you don't need to rely
there.
On an operator having to remember exactly how he did it every time. You have it remembers it for you.
That's cool.
So when they're developing these drones, or as you see more and more of these coming out, is there more of an effort to increase the capabilities of the camera that's on it, or more just like with the drone? Because are most people relying on, like, say, a GoPro?
It's either most of them are relying on a GoPro or some kind of small camera on them. DJI, I think, is the only company I remember seeing that has their own cameras on them. Mm-hmm. The big thing I think is the biggest obstacle right now is the FAA, and getting the okay to fly them commercially is the big problem. Mm-hmm. And I also saw an article on Wired, I think, a few days ago about the industry for drone blockers, and for technology that will disrupt drones, and it disrupts the signals of them. So that's going to be another interesting one to watch, and the inevitable lawsuits of someone who was flying their drone and someone had one of these and it crashed their drone and they get sued. And
or someone gets hurt when the drone crashes.
Yeah.
Or someone drone films something they shouldn't be drone filming, and then they get sued for flying over private property.
Yeah. Which is why, like, within, like, with DJI, they have things like they, with them, when you're outside using the GPS, it knows where the red, like, the red line areas are. Like, it knows, like, are you with, am I getting too close to an airport? And it will stop and not let you get any closer than the 5 mile radius that all airports have.
Interesting. Well, it's cool to see laws catching up with technology, at least in this area.
It's so rare.
Yeah, because with the internet, it's still, like, laws are so far behind. But, like, with drones, I guess because they're flying, because we've already dealt with flying things before, maybe laws can just adapt easier.
We should just make the next session of Congress. Let's get everybody in Congress to be less than 40. Then we may have some more realistic changes.
I'm sure that every generation has said that.
Yeah. Well, let's do it. Let's make it happen. And it, so with the whole idea of autonomy and things acting on their own, we can sort of get into the Avengers, because that's something that's touched on in the Avengers, with the idea of having this AI, an autonomous creature that is in charge of protecting Earth.
A very important distinction, creature that being a new thing.
So we're gonna, I'm gonna pause you guys here and say spoiler alert.
Hey.
Before we start, the next, 10-ish plus minutes, or I don't even know, probably the rest of the podcast is gonna be big spoilers about Marvel's Age of Ultron, and also, we'll be talking about the entire Marvel universe thus far in movies. So if you haven't seen any of those movies
or the show,
or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, correct.
Agent Carter.
I haven't watched Agent
Carter. I haven't watched Agent Carter. That's in the past a little bit more. But yeah, major spoiler alerts upcoming. Yep.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I had a wonderful segue too. And now it got derailed by that.
Wah.
It's not a wonderful segue if someone beats you to it.
Hey, I got this. I did the segue. I did the segment. Leave me alone, everybody. So, okay, so we'll start out. What did you guys think of? What's your five sentence review to start out?
Okay, I'm a huge Marvel fan, and I love what they've been doing with all of the films. I thought that the humor was on point with, like, a traditional comic book, which I loved, because those, you know, comic books tend to be much more humorous than full films. So I loved it. It was good.
Ben?
I thought it was very enjoyable. I think predictable, certainly. But I think that they disguised the predictability of it well enough that I was able to enjoy the film thoroughly. It was just a lot of fun. I want to speak to the comedic part, because the other movies, the independent hero movies, typically end up being a little bit more dramatic and less...
A little darker.
A little darker, which is fine, because that's when you start creating the bigger connections. Like, you get to draw people, the audience, into those characters, which makes it then easier for the director when they do the Avengers, that you can have stuff happen and people are still invested, when you have less time dedicated to each character.
And on there's, I think on Wired or Engadget, one of them had, like, the top 20 Josh Whedon-iest lines, one-liners from the movie.
Yeah.
There are some, like, it was pointed out, like, all, like, what lines were obviously written by Josh Whedon for the style of humor. Like, this thing is getting long, like Eugene O'Neill long. That was funny.
But yeah, I thought I enjoyed it. What about you, David? The sense that you did not enjoy it.
Well, I saw it a day earlier than all of you guys. I saw it on Thursday. And so I'm at a slight advantage, because I've had an extra day to process it and everything. And I thought it was okay. It was better than I thought it would be. I had very low expectations for it going in, and it was a little better than I thought. My biggest issue with it is I think it had the same problem as the first movie, where this is not the only movie to do it. Lots of movies had this problem. But when you deal with cast films or ensemble films, of having a relatively singular voice or perspective from what it's told from, and it has to jump around between a lot of different people. And I feel like this one, same thing, like, we're hopping around. So suddenly Thor is off dealing with so-and-so, but Natalie Portman isn't there because there's some whole thing with her not wanting to do any more films, so she's not around. And then you had to go to Captain America doing some stuff, and then Stark is doing some stuff, and the Hulk is dealing with the Hulk things and everything. And I feel like these would have been I would have also been more compelled and interested in it if both of these movies were told from the perspective of Black Widow and Hawkeye. Because I think it would have been a lot more interesting to be from the two, if you will, the normalist of the Avengers. And sort of the idea of like the puny humans, if you will, walking
not,
among
non-enhanced.
Them. Yeah, okay, fine. Non-enhanced.
The PC term in the Marvel Universe.
Okay, fine.
There's a high five there that you guys didn't see.
Non-enhanced people walking amongst the gods of the rest of them, if you will. And I think that would have been, and actually they made fun of themselves at one point. At the very end, you have Hawkeye going like, I'm walking around here with a bow. I know it doesn't make any sense. I appreciate them making fun of themselves
a little bit. Fighting robots on a flying city, and yeah. I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes any sense.
I wonder how much of that was ad-libbed by Jay.
That's what I feel like with that one is I feel like I'm jumping around between all of them. And I feel like this one more so is almost going from Stark's perspective a little bit. I felt a little stronger towards him.
It's kind of like Stark versus Cap.
Yeah.
Seem to be the main perspectives.
Yeah. And again, just like last time, like they're... Well, also one in the opening scene, they're running through it's this huge fight. Like the opening scene is like 15 minutes long, and then you get the title at that point. And so it's this huge
gratuitous fight scenes.
Well, and then they're running along, and everyone happens to be jumping over the same hill at the same time, and like the obvious for the 30 million fanboys, that's my desktop background for the next 2 years until I get the next Avengers movie, and which I felt like that was fan service to like the most painfully obvious that it hurt.
But it was also wonderful.
I think it was wonderful. I thought it was very comic booky. Like, it was
a freeze panel.
Yeah.
Like,
it had that feel.
Sean, the sound guy, agrees.
Yeah.
And our studio audience also agrees.
I agree with you, David.
One
in
thumb
the sense
up.
That I thought Captain America's and Thor's their own individual problems with Scarlet Witch's, I don't know, her spell that she cast on them for them to go through their fears. I thought they were kind of trivial. I thought that Thor going to his random pool with the scientist, that...
Yeah, I didn't like...
Yeah,
there was no explanation.
That was not explained very well.
Yeah, it just happened.
No.
Well, and the other thing I feel like is... I feel like there was... Not to the same extent, I think, but like with Star Trek, the 2009 Star Trek and then Star Trek Into Darkness, like the characters had reset. Like their character development went back. And same in this one, like, so they've conceivably been working together, hunting down Hydra bases for
a while.
Months, weeks, I don't know.
I think it's a couple months.
So they've been working together, but it seems to me they still have the exact same problems that they had in the last one. Like, still, like,
well,
okay,
when you
so
get
Thor,
a
so,
god, a giant green man, a billionaire
well, so
playboy,
they're
and
trying...
like four other people in the same, you're going to have the same problems.
Yeah,
but
and they're going to be resolved in a couple of months.
But still, like, it felt like there was no change. Like, as soon as Stark did something that they didn't like, what was the first thing Thor did? He ran up and grabbed him by the throat and lifted him up. Just like when they first interacted they got into a fight at the first Avengers.
He's from Asgard. I think that's just how they do it there.
But
yeah.
But also, they're not on Asgard.
But that's a cultural thing.
that's
like
a Thor thing. He's just very reactive, very instinctual.
Yeah.
I felt like I was just annoyed by it the whole time. It's like, okay, now they're still fighting about being a team because, you know, I don't know, like, how long the big basic training is. I don't know.
But you got to see...
So 3 months, so...
But you got to see them, a couple of them start moving together, like, creating partnerships. So, like, that was between, like, Captain America and Thor when they had, like, their little combo power with, like, Thor hitting the shield and creating this whole sound wave. And then you have the relationship between Black Widow and Hulk becoming more of a thing. You're gonna say
so I'm going to point out the big difference in you comparing the 3 month, like, boot camp to what's going on now. With the Avengers... I mean, they're not a military unit. They're sort of a group by necessity. And yes, a common goal, but not common ways to get there or any understanding or agreement versus when you're in boot camp and the whole goal is for you to become a cohesive unit and you're trained very specifically for that purpose. And I think, yes, you know, they worked really well together and they had like cool combo moves where they all like, you know, burned things together, like the
yeah.
shield. And that's certainly a product of them working together for the last several months, but it's not Their point is to never be a cohesive unit. They are standalone figures working towards a common goal.
Correct. I agree with that. They're all individuals. None of them are really used to working as teams except for Captain America, who leads them, who tries to lead them as best as he can.
See, and for me, that seems unbelievable. It doesn't then compel me, because like, so if I had a common goal with the same group of people for the sort of several months, I would at least try to make some headway somewhere. It felt like they hadn't made any changes really since the last one. Okay, yeah, they had a few little combo moves, but they're still treating each other the same way and the same distrust as if they hadn't seen each other in the past few months, and now they just happened to get back together.
Well, it's a very high stress few months too, I would assume.
And I think as far as not explaining things, you have like two like of the smartest people in the world. You have the Hulk and you have Tony Stark.
I wouldn't call Hulk the smartest. I'd call Bannerman.
Sorry, I know. I couldn't remember his name. So anyway, Bruce Bannerman and Tony Stark.
Banner. Not Bannerman. Banner.
Whatever. Whatever. They're the smartest people in the world. How are they supposed to be able to tell the rest of the Avengers everything that they're doing? Like, how are they supposed to explain? So a lot of them are just autonomous. They're working on their own. So that's why no one else knew about the Ultron Project, because how are they supposed to explain the Ultron Project? Plus, part of it's part of it's like Tony Stark still dealing with all this shit that he, in his mind, that he experienced when he went into the other dimension and came back. He's like,
traumatized.
Yeah, very traumatized. That's definitely given him a direction, or given his character a direction.
Yeah, and of course, in like, I didn't get any of that from Stark. He seemed just as cocky and as he did in the previous film. Like, they alluded to that stuff, but like, he didn't seem any less cocky than he was previously. And after seeing Iron Man 3, I didn't really care for Iron Man 3 either. I'm sort of sick of comic book movies at this point. I'm done. I'm done. But like, I felt like so many of these characters stayed two dimensional the whole time, and I feel like they didn't change. Like Thor,
be a product of the movie focusing on so many people at once, though.
Exactly, and as I said, like I don't like. And one thing they talked about for the first Avengers film is, and which I thought it would have made it better, was Joss Whedon. Originally, the whole movie was supposed to be through sort of the perspective of Captain America and him coming into the 21st century and dealing with that. But then the studio had their way with the cutting room floor, and it had to be cut down, and so that sort of narrative point of view went away. I feel like the same thing happened here, where I didn't have a voice that mattered.
So
like it was had to jump around between everybody, and it was just sort of got into a muddled mess. I'm trying to keep track of, okay, wait, where's Iron Man right now? Oh, right, Iron Man is in the mystical nexus in Stockholm or wherever it was, in a giant, like, in the most sci-fi looking server farm I've ever seen.
Isn't that place in Oslo, though? I think that place exists.
I don't think that exists. I don't think there's one singular hub for the internet.
Singular hub. It just all passes through there at some point. I'm pretty sure that's a thing.
I think a lot of the characters actually did have an arc in the movie. So, I think the only one who really didn't was Thor. But it all kind of begins. I think the easiest one to see is Captain America's, because when it starts with him, he's still very much dealing with his past, like who he was before, calling people out on bad language. You know, he's from a whole different era. And then by the end of the movie, he's swearing himself. He's given up on being a soldier and taking orders. He's giving commands more. He's taking ownership of being this new person.
In the Avengers. He was still trying to get a hold of where he's going to be, and the fact that the people around him aren't soldiers, and then he has to grow and learn to deal with all those of being in his environment. And
but he's still holding on to it, though. And he doesn't let go of it until the end of this movie. And that's if you watch Winter Soldier, that's true too.
Since we've started pulling in some of these other movies, I just sort of like to bring up the topic of what Marvel is doing with all of their movies sort of conjointly, because it's sort of the first between Marvel and DC, it's the first of the two to sort of take a cohesive approach to all of their films.
Yeah, because DC is so effing
they're
things
so
up
disjointed.
Right now.
They're so disjointed. You have Batman, and now they have Batman versus Superman that's coming out. But there's no like I think the way Marvel is sort of weaving their story through all their TV shows and all their movies is really sort of fascinating overarching storytelling.
Yeah.
And I agree, but my counter to bringing a Star Trek reference here, the more complicated the plumbing, the easier it is to muck up the works, as said by Scotty. But I feel like it's, right now, it's still somewhat working. I said right now it is working. They are able to still connect things. But if you look at their lineup over the course of the next, planned out to like 2020 or something?
Yeah, I think
2025 or something, as they have the movies planned out. It's only going to get even more complicated. And I wonder, like, how much are they still going to try and keep this all linking it back to one thing before it just becomes a big mess of trying to cram, okay, let's get Falcon
They're going to retire some of the heroes for a while. So, like, Iron Man's not going to come back probably for a while. Hawkeye. Bruce Bannerman went off somewhere.
All of them will be back for Avengers 3, like Iron Man, like Stark is back.
I don't think they are.
No, they're signed for it. I looked it up specifically, but I wanted to know.
There's also things where, like, Tom Hiddleston was signed for Avengers 2, and they shot film of him and cut him out of the movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is actually used in the movie? I pulled up a list of...
Who's Tom Hiddleston?
Loki.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The heartthrob of the year.
There's a huge list of Marvel movies, probably about 4 a year until 2020. Ant-Man's coming out this year. Same with the new like Fantastic Four reboot.
Yep. Which no connection. That's a Sony one.
Oh, is
so,
it?
Yeah. So it's Fantastic Four, X-Men, and sort of Spider-Man. That's sort of in weird ground. That's all Sony.
Aren't
Fox
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch supposed to be?
Yes.
X-Men. Yeah, they're, and actually, X-Men, technically, Quicksilver is the same. Technically, it's supposed to be the same character in X-Men Days of Future Past and this one. Like, they're the same. They're obviously not the same character, but, like, that's the same universe. It's supposed to be the same person.
It is, and it's supposed to be, but they have pretty drastically different backstories and
well, both
on-screen
Quicksilver
personas.
And Silver and Scarlet Witch are
Magneto's kids. But I think in the way that they presented them in the Avengers movies was, like, their parents died.
Yeah,
they
didn't necessarily connect. Though they left it in a way where it could be.
It could have been like a surrogate family.
Yeah, exactly. And I looked up a whole video about the origins of those two, and that's sort of where it goes, is that he was the father, then they went to a surrogate family in their made up country, and then that's the parents they know. They don't know about their father.
Yeah.
At all. Their biological father.
I'm surprised they actually killed off Quicksilver. I imagine that he was going to receive some sort of, like, the treatment that, like, they were able to magically fix.
That annoyed me so much, too. Like, so you have all this, and this is not the only film to do it, so you have all this amazing technology that's able to do it, and who's using it? You guys. Not the rest of the world who could benefit from this. And granted, with the skin stitching stuff, like, that was at, like, it looked like it was sort of a research facility in wherever it was.
It was in Seoul.
So, thank you. It was there. So, like, maybe that one is, like, Seoul? Something they...
Seoul, Korea.
Seoul. So, maybe that one is a public one that's becoming available.
That's true for reality. That a lot of, like, the really great stuff that exists is only used by, like, the extraordinary people because, one, it's not cheap.
Name one.
What?
Name one.
Military exosuits.
Those aren't viable.
Yeah, but
okay,
they're being
okay.
used. Is
okay,
what
let
I'm
me
saying.
Let me rephrase it away. Something that can benefit everybody. I won't find a benefit to an exosuit. I'm an able-bodied person who can move around. I don't need one. However, if the military had a machine that could stitch up my skin and fix it, put it back after I've gotten third-degree burns, that is something I could use.
Yes, but then you have to call into question, in this theoretical world, the materials that's needed to make said machine, how much do we have of that? How accessible is that? How much of a prototype is that?
Yeah, is he a test subject and it's experimental and he's a voluntary test subject to it?
Because it sounded like this person who made that technology was still, like, figuring it out. Like, she was at the very top of her field and that she was just able to, like, figure it out.
Yeah, it still sounded experimental.
Yeah.
So and the other thing, speaking of other things that bothered me, there's not a short list. The Stark Foundation buying a building. Because how many people die? Okay, well, that's getting into another issue. Okay, so there was the big Hulk fight, the Hulk and Veronica fight. a lot of people died there. Even if they didn't show it, that a lot of people died.
Yeah. They had to.
And so, and I don't for a second believe that any organization, even as large as conceivably Stark is, with their with his energy conglomerate business now, could afford to deal with a catastrophe of that size, with the number of buildings they destroyed, the number of buildings people they killed, the whole skyscraper that they knocked down.
I think he just bought the skyscraper. Yeah, and I don't think they alluded that Stark was the only foundation that was going to go help, but that was just one.
Even
of them.
Still, like for the first Avengers film, like an insurance company did an audit to find out how bad the damage of that fight would have been in New York.
Yeah.
And it was like $100 or $200 billion disaster, not taking into account the long term payments that would have to be made out to families. So we're talking about the Avengers going in and doing this.
Now we're getting into like the Incredibles discussion where everyone stopped being a superhero because people sued them for collateral damage.
Yeah.
And I think the Marvel Universe is not to that point yet where people still are seeing, you know, this is collateral damage for the greater good. And yes, you know, Stark had you mentioned his foundation and he like bought the skyscraper, presumably. That he just, you know, totally wrecked. But I mean, the rest of it is casualty of trying to stop a mass extinction event.
Oh, and also another thing I found with it, which I understand why they did it. The whole idea that nobody died, they play it off as if nobody dies. Well, yeah. Obviously people died, but people have to die, and the kind of, by things like that they're being dealt with, people
cars
died.
Being thrown by the Hulk.
Yeah, people died. It's a fact. However, they make it off, and especially can be seen greater is in the end scene when they're evacuating everybody off the island, and they make it sound like, oh, we got all the civilians out. It's all good. Somebody got left behind. Somebody died. Lots of people died. Like, you lifted a giant continent with rocks that were falling off of it. Like, people died.
I think that goes back just to the nature of the
comic book franchise.
Comic, but yeah.
Yeah, that would like everybody lives.
Because Star Wars is that same way, so you're going to have that problem with Star Wars?
What do you mean? You see Starfighter people die all the time.
Yeah, but no one really reacts to it, though.
Really? I can remember a couple times when in the first battle.
Okay, let's talk about this. So we kill this giant ball that has millions of people on it, and we have a ceremony for it. We kill a second giant ball, and we have another big party for it, and everybody's happy about it. I mean, countless people died, but people are happy about it.
That's war, though.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's the enemy.
So how is this different? This is just war.
This is civilian casualties versus a planet ship meant to destroy people.
I don't know.
It's intent. It's, you know, in a war, sometimes you are happy that the other people are dead because you're fighting them. In this case, it's civilians. It's, you know, them trying to prevent collateral damage of actual innocent bystanders.
Sure.
Versus a stormtrooper on a death ship, you know. Yeah.
But as we start to wrap up this particular sort of conversation, I also have to say a whole heap load of CG all throughout this thing.
Pretty
a lot
well
more
done,
than my
too.
Test.
To be expected.
Oh, I saw a lot of it that I thought stood out a lot and it bothered me. Like the number of times when they're walking through scenes or locations that obviously weren't real. Again, that goes into use of CG, and you know, old-fashioned David over here just gets annoyed when it's not done
likes
for real.
Practical effects.
Practical effects. Who saw it in 3D?
We saw it all in 3D, I think.
No, I'm not paying for 3D. No, I saw it in 2D. I actually kind of prefer
2D because of the way that they blur the background out. I'm a very background-focused person. Like, when I went and watched Avatar, I actually much preferred it in flat versus anything else.
You know you can
else.
Get 2D glasses? You can actually buy glasses that if you go to a 3D movie will make it 2D.
But they still blur the background.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a thing.
Yeah.
And we all opted to see it together.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, but what would you do if you could see movies in your own house first? That would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let David take this away.
Yep. So there was this whole thing. There's this whole, I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. And it is it's a service for the ultra rich. I think it costs about $35,000. I don't know if it's a $35,000 setup, but you can watch first run movies in your home for like, so you could pay, if you had the service, you could pay $500 and watch Avengers in your living room.
Just 500?
$500 for a 24-hour rental.
Hmm. That's cool.
It doesn't sound that
again,
bad.
You have to have the $35,000 installation and everything first.
Oh.
Yeah. And like apparently it uses a thing where you use like a thumbprint on it or a fingerprint down on a sensor to prove who it is. So like you can't, like your buddy couldn't go over and watch it. It had to be the person who got the service has to be there to put their fingerprint down, and then they get to do it.
I don't know how advantageous that is. I mean, part of the reason why I like going to the theater is just because everybody's in it and you get to watch it on this huge ass screen. Like, that's awesome.
And then, or for me, when I went and I heard some lady behind, two rows behind me saying after the Jurassic World trailer, goes like, yeah, I never got through the first Jurassic Park movie. I just got bored. Like,
you do have me there. And that bothers the shit out of me. It's like the audience, like, just ruins movies. Like, either they laugh a whole bunch.
And the thing is, like,
eating.
I don't remember being around people like I feel like you have to go to the right viewings for the right movies, and then you get the right crowd. Like when I went to see Lord of the Rings, when Lord of the Rings came out, the crowd was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like because it was all because it was right when it opened on Fridays, so it was all like the super fans. So it was packed with those people who were super into it and super respectful for it.
It wasn't the people annoyed that it was so long and they went because so and so told them to.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm. But it will be interesting because, you know, there's all the other, you know, with the North Korea movie, The Interview.
Oh, yeah.
That one got released, basically got its first run as video on demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It apparently did very well for itself for doing it that way.
Probably, honestly, better than it would have done in the theaters, I would arguably say.
Yeah, and so it's interesting, like, if there's going to be, so, we, like, right now we sort of have two, like, well, sort of like genres of movies. Like you have your direct, you have your theater release or theatrical release movies, and then you have your, if you will, direct to DVD movies, which is slightly going around. Like now there's like, if you go to Redbox, there's still, you can still name movies there that are, never went to a theater ever.
No.
So I'm curious, is a new third option going to evolve where it's direct to video on demand for new films? So like, so you, maybe you don't, you know, you don't want to go through making physical DVDs or whatever, you don't have the money and resources to go to a theatrical release, but maybe your independent film can do direct to video on demand and you have your people pay $10 to watch it.
I mean, it's certainly a viable thing, and I think, you know, what big blockbusters are going to start moving towards too is a much quicker turnaround time to get it to on demand than we've seen in previous ways. Like the, you know, as soon as ticket prices drop off, they can just immediately release it to on demand and just buy it for $20 on your Xbox because you can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see a lot more of, you know, that sort of moving to that kind of distribution a lot sooner than it has in the past. Because before it was like you'd wait almost a whole year before it became like out on video or whatever. Or
back when we were growing up, longer than that. Like you could sometimes wait several years.
Yeah.
Before, like, you know, thinking back, because right when we were growing up and then DVDs started becoming cheaper and, you know, all the TV shows that we watched when we were really young, it's like, well, it was on TV and now it's gone. That's that. And then, you know, like, so we watched a movie when we were like 6 years old, and then when we turned 18, oh wait, it's out on DVD now.
Mm-hmm.
Huge wait time. Instead of like, I think it was for House I first noticed it, like season like 5 or 6 of House ended, and the next day or within a matter of weeks the DVD for that season was out and ready. It's just such a fast turnaround. We need our content and we need it now, and I don't want to pay for it and I don't want ads on it, and I'm the consumer.
I have one thing that I thought of that I wanted to share is that AMC announced that they're having a Star Wars marathon where they're going to show all 6 movies before the new Force Awakens comes out.
That's like Harry Potter. Harry Potter did that too.
Well, the bigger question is whether they're going to show the theatrical versions or the special edition versions of 4, 5, and 6.
That is the question.
I would take a day off of work for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or 2 days of work. How much content is that?
It would be a full day for sure.
No, it'd be longer.
That for Indiana Jones.
Yeah, well, it takes almost to do, if you were to watch all 3 Lord of the Rings movies that are 3.5 hours each, that's like 10 hours or something right there.
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with 6 movies that are all about 2 hours each, yeah, you need like an actual like 24-hour day.
Yeah, because I mean, the way that they do it, it's like 15 minutes between movies. Like you're kind of I mean, it's people in and out of the theater all the time.
No, here's the real question, though. Can I show up when they start episode 4? Yeah. Skip the first 3.
I think you pay for the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you can come whenever.
I mean, was it when we saw Indiana Jones, you guys left for the after the third one.
Yeah, there was no way I was going to stay for the Crystal Skull.
I won a trivia question because I stayed. I got a deck of Indiana Jones cards.
La-di-da.
Yeah, I know. It was, what was Indiana Jones' full name? You guys know it?
I don't.
What?
I know his name isn't Indiana. That was the dog's name.
Well, the incorrect person who answered before me said his name was Henry Jones Jr., which is not true. Is if you know your stuff about it, you know that his middle name is Walton. And so his full name is Henry Walton Jones Jr.
Oh, my.
I'm so happy with myself.
So the other guy, he wasn't incorrect. He was just
not fully correct. Yeah, that one is a really obscure fact, as well as his birthday, July 1st. 1899.
Where we end the podcast.
That's where we end the podcast.
Just goes
keep going and going on.
You should just edit it so it's you just talking about Indiana Jones facts and it just trails off.
Yeah, it just fades into oblivion. Yeah. But with that, I think that's our time for this month.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next month at our next ISCast, and have a great one.
Happy trails.